Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with Shira Sion, executive director and one of the vocalists of women's vocal ensemble Kitka, to discuss the group's annual Winter Songs tour, which starts on December 7th in Santa Cruz and runs through December 21st with concerts throughout the Bay Area. Also joining in the studio are Joyce Kyle of the Ragazzi Boys Chorus and Colin Lee of Ragazzi Continuo, the adult version of the chorus, to share details about upcoming holiday concerts by both Ragazzi ensembles. And from the Pear Theater in Mountain View, we're joined once again by artistic director Betsy Cruz Craig and playwright director James Cope to talk about the world premiere of the millionth production of A Christmas Carol, an original comedy involving a small black box theater in Northern California and its struggle to create art and still pay the bills. Stay with us.
Yeah.
That's the unmistakable sound of Kitka, which presents its annual Winter Songs Tour of 6 concerts plus a community sing at venues around the Bay Area December 7th through the 21st. The tour is celebrating its new holiday music album, Evening Star, the opening track of which we just had a taste of from Bulgaria, Zvezda. It's a pleasure to welcome back Shira Sion, executive director of the Kitka Ensemble, a fellow Connecticutian who has been a producer, performer, arts administrator, and cultural worker since her teens. She received her musical education in classical performance and ethnomusicology from the Hart School of Music in West Hartford, Connecticut, Boston U's Tanglewood Institute, Wesleyan University, and Russia's Moscow Conservatory. In addition to Kitka, Shira has worked with the New Women's Philharmonic, the Women's Philharmonic, the New Music America Festival, the Music Research Institute, as well as the Bay Area Music Archive, San Francisco Rock and Roll Museum. Quite a range of collaborations, in addition to others with multicultural and multidisciplinary artists. Shira, a pleasure to welcome you back to the open airwaves.
So wonderful to be here. Thank you.
And I just had to let that entire track play. What a splendid addition to the repertory that you've added in CD form now for us.
Thank you. And it was actually a very exciting moment because I believe this is the very first time any track from this new album has hit any airwaves anywhere. So this is really a
you heard it first,
radio premiere.
K-A-L-W. Fantastic. Well, let's talk about how you selected the music that's part of the CD. And I imagine that's the focus of this concert tour. So,
yeah. So for 17, actually more than 17, probably close to 20 years now, Kitka has been actively collecting, researching, arranging, transforming music for the winter season from all over Eastern Europe and some points beyond. And we've really collected a treasure trove of repertoire from Balkan, Slavic, and Caucasian lands over the years. In 2004, we released our first album of winter season material called Winter Songs. We produced an album and a companion songbook to go with that. And since that release, we've continued the collecting and researching and arranging and performance process, and it was time to release a new collection, and our audiences were clamoring for it. And this particular new release has been 2 years in the making, and the discs are literally en route from the plant in New York to San Francisco as we speak.
Fantastic.
So we're very excited.
All right. Well, take us back to, you've been with Kitka since 1988. Is that possible?
It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's going on 30 years, which wow. I don't know how they flew by so fast.
We can only hope the next 3 years will fly by as fast.
Seriously.
You know what I mean.
Yes, may we make it. As you said in my bio, I sort of had a background in Western classical music. But while a student at Wesleyan University, I caught the ethnomusicology bug because that particular institution has a world-renowned ethnomusicology program, which I kind of tripped upon quite by accident. And really, it was in my final days as an undergrad there that I discovered the women's traditional harmony singing traditions of Eastern Europe, and became just obsessed with those sounds. And one of the reasons I moved to the Bay Area was that I had heard that there was a very fertile Balkan music and dance scene out here, and I was determined to find those people and that kind of...
What did you discover about how that formed out here?
Well, in the 60s, I think, maybe even as far back as the 50s, there was a movement that was sort of started by Red Diaper Baby, political radicals who were sort of looking for cultural art forms that sort of created a certain sense of idealized community, I think. And Balkan dancing in particular is a very egalitarian, very collective, very kind of community circle kind of form. And the traditional songs and instrumental music that accompany that form are very compelling just purely on musical grounds. And so I think people who were sort of both musically and sociologically curious at that time started kind of recreating a semblance of an Eastern European village life in Los Angeles and San Francisco and other American urban centers. And that scene has really grown and expanded and changed and transformed and gone much deeper in its sort of knowledge and authenticity over the years.
Mm-hmm. That opening track, Zvezda, wow, where did you discover that? And that is like the signature sound, I think, of Kitka, those close harmonies.
Tight harmonies. That tune was given to us by an amazing Bulgarian singer and choral director named Svetanka Vadimezova, who has been our principal mentor in Bulgarian folk choir repertoire since around 2002, I believe, is when we first started working with her. She is currently ethnomusicology professor and choir director down at UCLA. Previously, she was a very esteemed choral singer in Bulgaria. She has sung with Le Mystère de Voix Bulgare, with the Philip Kutev Ensemble, with the Bulgarian State Radio and Television Choirs, as well as with her own family band. She was born into a family and then married into another family that really has centuries-old traditional music lineage. So we've been working with Svetanka for many years, have shared lots of repertoire with her, have been coached by her, have recorded with her, have toured with her both in the States and in Bulgaria. So she was the one who gifted that tune to us.
Beautiful, just beautiful. The title of the CD, Evening Star, has some significance to the Slavonic tradition. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So the Evening Star, or Zvezda Vechernica, the title of that track, is really prominent in a lot of the folklore of this region. It's the morning or evening star, depending on the folkloric story you're telling. And Christian tradition adopted that sort of pagan, astral-based winter solstice type symbology into the Star of Bethlehem. But actually, the evening star was thought to be either the planet Venus or the planet Mercury, the first star that appears in the sky. And Zvezda Vechernica could be the wife of the moon god, the mother of the stars, also the keeper of the gates that open and close that allow the sun god's chariot to sort of travel across the sky during the course of daylight. And so the lyrics of the song are very simple. It basically just describes the evening star shining above on high, illuminating the broad earth even further afar below. But you can see that sort of the musical basis is much more complex and sort of evocative. It's structured around a very traditional Bulgarian two-part diaphonic, which is just a drone voice and a sort of acrobatic melody that sort of plays with the close dissonances in proximity to that drone. But the composer, Stefan Dragostinov, who's a very prominent Bulgarian choral composer, expanded that very simple traditional form into this choral piece that has, I think, at points, 6 or 7 part harmony.
Wow. That must be a challenge on many levels, not only harmonically. So what other countries' music have you mined for this CD and for these concerts?
So beyond Bulgaria, Russia, Ukraine, Greece, Georgia, Serbia, let me see, Macedonia. I have to look at
I know we don't want to leave anyone out. We want those
yes,
angry
we don't
letters
leave anyone
come
out. Eastern European Jewish Yiddish language traditions. Romania. I should wrap my playlist.
That's all right. A significant number of countries is represented. Let's put it that way.
Spalletti.
Are all the works Lazona contemporary, or is it some traditional stuff that has been discovered as well?
A lot of the pieces on the album are actually centuries old, some possibly more than 1,000 years old. The Georgian traditional polyphonic pieces often date back to the 10th or 11th century. So we have those really ancient pieces kind of coupled with very new original arrangements that have been created by Kitka singers and our friends and musical colleagues.
How does it become possible to understand how these songs should be sung then, if they're that old?
It's sort of like the classic ethnomusicological puzzle. What we love to do is really listen very closely to traditional singers from those parts of the world who are carriers of village singing traditions and family traditions that are passed on in the oral tradition. I think those are our most kind of accurate and informative sources of styling. But we also work very closely with choral directors and ethnomusicologists who have been steeped in those traditions. But because we're mainly an American ensemble of American-born singers and musicians, we don't like to be purely sort of preservationists and try to replicate the sounds and as a village ensemble would do. We try to bring sort of a contemporary musical sensibility, and also our own sort of artistic sensibility as American artists who've sort of been exploring world music and contemporary music traditions now for almost three decades.
That's Shira Sion, the executive director and of Kitka. So speaking of the women of Kitka, is it always a fixed ensemble number? How many are in this particular tour and on the CD?
Actually, the ensemble expands and contracts over time and project by project. On the CD, we actually have 10 singers performing, although not all at the same time. I would say on average, the group kind of expands and contracts between 7 and 9 singers, but in performance and also on the album, we have some trios, some solo performances as well. The group has had an interesting mix of longevity and transition personnel-wise. Myself and Janet Katulis, who was one of the producers of the CD, have been in the ensemble pretty much nonstop for 30 years. We've also had people who have been singing with us for just a season. We've also had people who sang with us for 10 years, took a 15-year break to raise a child and send her off to college, and then came back to the ensemble. So it's a very fluid group, and I think over the course of the group's history, we've probably had close to 60 women participate at
wow.
various times.
Fantastic. Winter Songs, Kitka's annual holiday tour showcasing seasonal music from a wide variety of Eastern European ethnic and spiritual traditions. Lots of opportunities to catch the performance in Santa Cruz on December 7th, closer by San Rafael on the 9th, Menlo Park on the 10th, Oakland on the 15th, here in San Francisco at Old First Concerts at Old First Presbyterian Church on Saturday, December 16th, and the annual Winter Songs Community Sing at Nile Hall on 13th Street in Oakland, as well as on Woodside on December 21st. For more information, kitka.org. The CD, Winter Songs Evening Star, is in the process of being shipped from the East Coast, and as they say, makes a great gift, right?
That's right.
So you can go to kitka.org for some more information. Shira Sion, thanks so much for coming in. Tell us a little bit about the beautiful piece we're going to go out with, the Fly Trembling Spirit. We're going to take a trip to Greece, Greek-American tune.
Sure. This is an original Kitka composite arrangement, which is kind of a mashup of three traditional songs, two from Greek Epiros, which is a mountain region on the Greek-Albanian border, coupled with an old American sacred harp tune. At various Winter Songs concerts, we've sort of explored the winter theme of darkness and death, and so this collage kind of goes to that place, and it features solos by Caitlin Tabankai Austin, Michelle Simon, and myself.
Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
am I born to die, to lay this body down, and must my trembling spirit fly into a world unknown?
Music of Kitka receiving its broadcast premiere here on KLW from the new CD, Evening Star. More information about that CD and the concert tour, which will feature music from the album Evening Star, is at kitka.org. Good afternoon again. I'm David LaTulip. Some more fun to come. You'll hear about a production of a millionth production of A Christmas Carol, a humorous take on what it's like to put on community theater and make a profit. That's being presented by the Para Theater. And now some more great music, this time from the Ragazzi Boys Chorus.
Thank you.
thrilled to have such incredible choral music on today's open air. That's the Ragazzi Boys Chorus singing Ad Dinu. It's based on a Sufi text, and it's from their 2015 concert, preserved on a 2016 CD. The Ragazzi Boys Chorus celebrates the universal power of love, presenting Ubi Caritas, Where There Is Love. Three concerts of songs from many faiths will be followed by a rousing audience sing-along of holiday favorites. On Saturday, December 2nd in Palo Alto, Sunday, December 3rd in Burlingame, and here in San Francisco on Sunday, December 10th. My guest, Joyce Kyle, is artistic director and co-founder of Ragazzi, and she's served on the faculties of the College of Holy Names, Notre Dame de Namur University, and Lick Wilmerding High School here in San Francisco. She founded the choral program at Crystal Springs Upland School and has served as Western Division Chair of the Boy Choir Committee for the American Choral Directors Association. A pleasure to welcome you back, Joyce.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So that opening track, Ad Dinu, is sort of continuing the theme of this year's concerts, including not only American or Western European music, but of different traditions.
Well, and I think it reflects the population of our singers. As you know, Ragazzi's celebrating our 30th anniversary right now this year, and the population has changed. So we used to do a very traditional Christmas repertoire, and we have people from all different religions and countries, and we have a parent who coached us in a Hindu song. I guess it's a Hindi song, and she had 10 years of experience in that tradition herself. So we always bring in somebody that knows what they're doing when we do a non-Western type of song.
Mm-hmm. Ubi Caritas explores the concept of universal love through choral musics, not only from the Hindu tradition, but from the Jewish, Christian, and Muslim faiths. Tell us about the ancient plain chant Ubi Caritas text that serves as the focal point for several of these tunes.
Well, it's interesting because that text first emerged maybe around 400 when Christianity was just a bunch of people hanging out together and praying together. And I kind of like that because it does refer to Christ at some point, but it also just says where there is love, there is God. And I thought, well, God can be all the different gods that people celebrate, or if you don't believe in God, you can believe in love anyway.
Sure.
And so it really predates dogma and doctrine and all the things that religion has come to signify for a lot of people in a negative way. So I was hoping this would be sort of a universal celebration of love. And then we do our little carol sing-along, so we don't ignore Christmas because some people really love that traditional stuff also.
Sure, sure. Sleigh Ride by Leroy Anderson, I consider one of the best pieces of music ever written, but that's my own humble opinion.
Right.
Anyway, among the featured composers is Paul Halley, who was organist and choir master at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City. Tell us more about Paul and his contribution to the concert.
Okay, so I was able to do more research than I should have done before to prepare for you, so it was really fun. So he took the Ubi Caritas is a chant, Gregorian-style chant, and I probably listened to 15 versions of it to choose the ones that I wanted to perform.
But so a lot of composers have already set the text, yeah.
Tons and tons. And the famous one is by Durifle. And that was the one that I knew. And that's a very meditative piece. And I was going to share with you that one of my singers, well, several of my singers, especially the high school boys, when we sing it, they get so meditative, they close their eyes. And I'm like, no, you can't do that. You got to watch the conductor. So that chant is the basis for the Halley. But then he took a African chant, and it combines, it's a Yorubu and Kemetic chant, which involves Egyptian sources and West African. So for the audience experience, they will hear this chant about four times in different settings. And then this setting, all of a sudden there's percussion and there's bass guitar and there's movement and there's a layering of these two types of sounds at the same time. And that's our finale. So I thought that would be kind of a great bringing it all together, the different...
Very nice.
Yeah.
Another representative of the Ubi Caritas text setting is Ola Gyeo. Is that right, Gyeo?
Now, that is being done by our Young Men's Ensemble. And they're all very beautiful. I'm doing the Durafle, and I'm doing one by Elberdin, which, and the I think it's Jalo, he's Norwegian. Anyway, they're both more contemporary in the harmonic, but still the basis is that chant. So it's very interesting how you'll hear that same chant all these different ways. So it'll be interesting if our audiences enjoy that or are bored by that. I hope not.
Well, also one of the most exciting and prominent new composers of choral music, Michael John Trotta, is represented on the program.
That is a real challenge. That has an underpinning. So we're doing the very Latin chant, Veni, Veni, Emmanuel, Come, Come, Emmanuel, which has just been forever in Christmas traditions. And he has set a rhythmic pulsing thing underneath that. So we're dividing into about 8 parts for that. So you have somebody singing this very melodic "Go Come, O Come, Emmanuel." Underneath it's like ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, the other boys are doing. It was very challenging. I have one boy who's not quite 11. No, he's 9. He's not even 10 yet. So I was pretty taking a big risk on this one.
Well, we've got a couple of other tracks that we'd like to catch during this segment of Open Air. One of which is a Sanctus. Tell us about the Sanctus we're about to hear.
Well, that was from a concert we did, and Continuo joined us on that concert 2 years ago, and we did the Fourier Requiem, and we had a small orchestra. And then we recorded it on the same recording as the Adino in the spring of 2016, but we did it in March, and it was just, they were just wonderful in that Fourier Requiem, and it was originally written for boys and men anyway, so it was really appropriate.
Very nice. Here's the Sanctus, then more with Joyce Kyle and a graduate of the Ragazzi Boys Chorus, Colin Lee, to talk to us about Ragazzi Continuo. Also from the 2016 CD, I Dream a World, the Sanctus from Fauré's Requiem, performed by the Ragazzi Boys Chorus. Joyce Kyle, Artistic Director, joining us in studio to talk about the Ragazzi's Ubi Caritas, Where There Is Love. This Saturday in Palo Alto at the First United Methodist Church, Sunday at First Presbyterian in Burlingame, and then this Sunday at the Old First Presbyterian Church on Sacramento Street here in San Francisco. Just beautiful sounds.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we're actually joined by a graduate of the Ragazzi Boys Chorus now. Colin Lee sang with Ragazzi from 1998 to 2008. During that time, Colin toured with both domestically and internationally with Ragazzi and performed in various San Francisco symphony concerts and San Francisco opera productions. He went on to study at Santa Clara University, sang in both the Santa Clara Chamber Singers and the Concert Choir. And he also, when he's not singing with the group, he studies computer science as a PhD student at Stanford University, where he has an MS in electrical engineering from Stanford University, also held a double major in electrical engineering and computer science and engineering from Santa Clara University. Colin Ragazzi, Continuo President, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you very much for having us.
So as a graduate of Ragazzi, tell us how Continuo started. I mean, imagine you have a story to tell on that.
Yeah. So in about 2010, a bunch of Ragazzi alum, they all came back from college, and they were really looking for a group to sing in, something that they've, you know, in the tradition and the kind of style that we grew up singing in Ragazzi. But they just kind of weren't able to find that in kind of the community choirs and things like that. And I think the story went that they just kind of called up Joyce, and I think showed up at their house in their living room, and was like, "Well, what can we do?
What do we do now?
What do we do?" And I think that's where it all got started.
But they're pretty independent now.
That's correct. So
yeah.
They've grown from that in 2010. We've grown from that to we fluctuate, but right now we're at around 13. 13 graduates of Ragazzi, and we self-direct. So every season, we pick a director from amongst ourselves. And, you know, we pick our own repertoire, and we sing that.
Nice. Well, the Ragazzi Continuo's concerts are called Winter's Warmth. They're on Saturday, December 9th in Palo Alto, Sunday the 10th in Redwood City, and then here in San Francisco on Sunday the 17th at St. Peter's Episcopal Church here in San Francisco. RagazziContinuo.org for more information. Tell us about the music that has been chosen for these concerts.
Sure. Our music director this year, Daniel Crowley, I think he was really looking to embody the sense of light and warmth that you get in the wintertime, as opposed to, you know, the kind of cold and dark, maybe not necessarily cold and dark here in California, but, you know, in other parts of the world. And so we really wanted to select songs about light and warmth from various traditions, not just the Christian tradition. And not only that, but, you know, we have more secular pieces as well. I think some to note, we have Lux Alumque from Eric Whitaker, I think a piece that a lot of people love. And, you know, that's actually something we sung as boys when we were in Ragazzi in Ragazzi Boys Choir.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Tallis represented on the program as well.
As well, yep. I think a lot of great music. And so I think the great part about being able to sing in Continuo is just the ability to just keep singing at the level and quality that we just grew up singing with when we were in the boys' choir.
Mm-hmm. Joyce, have you helped them along? Do you get any kind of input on what
Not
they're doing?
Not anymore. They're
boys will be boys.
Exactly. At the beginning, I did, and they've had Vance George work with them.
Oh, super.
And he was there a couple days ago. And who else have you had? You've brought in people to mm-hmm. Ben Johns when he was working with Chanticleer. So, and I think it's always, and I do that, I always bring in people to help, and you get new ideas, and you get some professional development. Mm-hmm. But they're pretty much, I would say for the last 3 years, I haven't really had much input at all.
Mm-hmm. So does Ragazzi Continuo perform other than during the holiday season?
Yeah, so we typically have two concert series every year. So one in the winter and one kind of more in the spring. But we periodically do try to collaborate with other groups. So last year, we collaborated with Ragazzi Boys Chorus.
Yeah.
That was great. I mean, we always love singing with the boys. We'd love to be able to do it more if we could. But, you know, everyone in the group, we're all working professionals for this. You know, this is not our full-time gig. So it's sometimes tough to squeeze it in. But when we do, we love it.
RagazziContinuo.org for information about Ragazzi Continuo's concerts on the 9th, 10th, and 17th. And Ragazzi.org. RagazziI.org for the Ubi Caritas Where There Is Love concerts on the 2nd, 3rd, and 10th of this month. Joyce Collin, thank you so much for coming in. We're going to go out with Beta, please.
Can
another
I mention
point.
Auditions coming
oh,
up?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because that's a lifeblood. These boys, they grow up, their voices change. So we have a Sync Fest on Saturday, January 20th from 9:30 to 1, which is sort of a day camp. And it's open to all. It's free. And we try to encourage kids to come. And from that, we hopefully get new boys. And we also have a 5 to 7 year old no audition short little music and movement class. So they can contact Ragazzi for more information.
And I imagine that is at their website as well.
Yes.
Ragazzi.org. Yes. Thanks for coming in. Tell us about Betelemu.
Betelemu is another African chant, and it has percussion with it. And we recorded that also at Skywalker. Were you part of that a long time ago? Mm-hmm. And it's really a classic. It's all the men. It's no boys. All change voices. A very rhythmic and an exciting piece.
Colin, Joyce, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Ragazzi Boys Chorus. And in that recording, the Ragazzi Continuo president was also heard, Colin Lee. Information about their upcoming concerts at ragazzi.org and ragazzicontinuo.org. Well, it's always nice to hear of alternatives to the standard holiday fare offerings, be it Mark Morris's contemporary take on Tchaikovsky, The Hard Nut, or a John Waters Christmas, which just graced the stage of the Great American Music Hall this Tuesday. Well, it will be worth a trek down to Mountain View for you to maybe perhaps linger down there, if you're one of the thousands that commute down to Mountain View, to catch the Pear Theater's production of The Millionth Production of A Christmas Carol by James Cope, opening tomorrow through December 17th on the Pear stage on La Avenida Street in Mountain View. It's an original comedy about the struggle to create art and still pay the bills, with the Dickens classic as the focal point. Returning to our open airwaves is the artistic director of the Pear Theater, Betsy Cruz Craig, and the writer-director of the show, James Cope, who last brought to the Pear Geeks versus Zombies. James, Betsy, welcome back. Welcome back to you, Betsy.
Thank you.
And welcome, James, to our show.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, a millionth production of A Christmas Carol. Commerce versus profit.
Yeah.
Small theater is the theme. Tell us about the show. How did it come to you?
Funny enough, it came around because I wanted to stage A Christmas Carol over a year ago at the Pear. And the steering committee for the Pear, who helps decide our season, all kind of rolled their eyes in unison, saying, like, Christmas Carol's done too much. Everybody does it. And it's just it's been mined and mined and mined for every piece of gold it has, and it's just there now. And I thought, oh, we're such snobs. Oh, my goodness, how snobby are we? And then I went out into San Francisco and San Jose, and I saw posters for at least 10 different productions of A Christmas Carol, and I was like, oh, I'm an idiot and don't understand the world around me sometimes.
Or The Nutcracker.
Or the Nutcracker, or this, that. And I was like, so then that kind of started it. Why are we all doing it all the time? Do we love it? But we all know it. So then it became, why would you go see something that you know every step of and you know every trick that could be played in it? And that really kind of stuck with me. And so it became two questions. One, why do theaters keep putting it up? Okay, makes money. Theaters need to make money and they need exposure. And the best way to get exposure sometimes is by doing a show people have heard of. I know that show. I'm going to go to it.
It's an age-old story, as now Betsy Cruz Craig will probably say. I mean, we see that in the opera world. We see it in familiar titles coming back to haunt the opera stage and Nutcracker productions and Christmas Carol productions. So, but this isn't just a contemporary take on A Christmas Carol. This is a whole behind-the-scenes view at putting on a production.
Christmas Carol becomes a plot device within the play. Would you say, James?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I don't think is that subtle. Like, I hope audience is it's a small black box theater like The Pear and like hundreds other in the state that are putting on A Christmas Carol just for the ticket sales. And so we get to see the actors on their tech Sunday trying to get everything ready and the chaos and comedy that ensues with trying to get a show ready with not a lot of prep time. And then as the show goes on, we see the artistic director, the character of Fisher, as she is trying to orchestrate all this, kind of fall into the role of Scrooge. And her stage manager helping out with the show very much falls into the role of Bob Cratchit. And then we start to see that the other characters all fall into the very common roles in A Christmas Carol.
Life imitating art.
Life imitating art. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, it's also one of those things that I think the human experience is very common, you know. Maybe that's why we all want to go see it again and again and again. It's easy for us to relate to. We all know about those times in our life where we get frustrated or mad or selfish and we just can't take it anymore and we're more worried about us than anybody else.
I think it's comfort. I mean, I grew up in Minnesota where the Guthrie Theater did Christmas Carol every single year. Mm-hmm. I was always amazed, and they still do.
Pack them in.
They pack them in, mm-hmm. And who can blame them? You know, it's a sure thing, and it's a comfort to, you know, the theater and to the bank account at the theater,
yeah,
and to the audiences, because it is, I think, as you said, it's like, why would you come back and see something that you know every step of? Because it is familiar. You know what you're going to get, right? And it's a classic.
Yeah. And there are other plays actually on this topic. So when I started thinking about this, I reviewed, there's four plays that come to mind based on theaters doing A Christmas Carol and things going wrong. There's like four of them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, my idea is not even original. Like, all of this has been done 8 million times.
Everything old is new again.
Exactly. Yeah. But I started to read them and I didn't like their message, not to sound pretentious or anything, but it was, I was like, I think the real topic here is art as a product, art as commerce. Like, don't be stupid about it. If you don't care about making a profit, stay home and have a journal. But if you're going to go and sell tickets to something, you are making a product. And if then people are getting paid and depend on the jobs for it, what's your obligation to make sure you're selling enough tickets to help keep that place opened and running?
So Artistic Director Betsy Cruz Craig, how are advanced ticket sales going?
I can't reveal that information at this time. You know, it's pretty interesting because, like you said, it is a product. Theater is a product, but it's different in the sense that it's almost like a buffet. There are a million theaters out there, and everyone has a different taste. And I think that's, as an artistic director, one of the things you have to consider, how can you make a season that's like this delicious buffet table, that there's something appealing enough for someone to come and stay for that season.
You're serving up some doozies. Good for you. It's a nice balance.
Yeah, from the vibrator play to Millionth production of Christmas Carol to Ibsen. And that's one of the fun things, the most enjoyable thing about my job is trying to, and most frightening, is to do that juggling act of tastes and costs, and hopefully, you know, at the end, you know, you come up with something that people really love and want to come back and see, and that they trust because they feel comfortable knowing that they're going to get something that they like.
Mm-hmm. So we hear about the artistic director and the stage director having prominent roles in this behind the scenes production of A Christmas Carol. Who are the actual Cratchit and Scrooge?
In our show, we see four of the actors that are in the show, and they kind of fall into the role of the fools. They keep trying to use a method of acting where they use their own words to find the emotional needs for the scene, but a couple of them are not the brightest people in the world, so like all of their own words are just ridiculous sort of takes on the character. So,
and tell us about the music you chose. You chose some unusual music.
Well, there's actually sort of two soundtracks to the play. The play within a play is being scored by the finale of the Symphony of Organs,
and
yeah. It's a wonderful piece, and the reason that was chosen was because I found out when I first heard it, I was like, hey, that's the music from the movie Babe, which is this pig movie that I like. I really like the Babe pig movie, and I was shocked, like, hey, they ripped off this person. Then I found out that was always the plan, was to use his score to score their movie. And then as I started to write this, I was doing research on it, and I found out that Charles Dickens himself was ripped off multiple times. Like the first production after he wrote the book, the first production was called Scrooge and the Three Ghosts. Mm-hmm. And Charles Dickens didn't get a dime of it. And it was a huge hit for that theater. And I was like, oh my God, theaters and movies and art in general, we've all been ripping each other off for forever.
I don't think Dickens got any money at all from Scrooge McDuck from the Disney.
I know.
I don't think
outrageous.
He did either. And there's the sexiest Scrooge alive.
Yeah, exactly. no pants? Like, come on.
Your Scrooge has pants.
My Scrooge has pants. I want to make that clear.
Although we should mention that this show does include adult language and is not recommended for children.
Not recommended for children.
Don't come expecting to see A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, but that's the big thing. I know we're going to get two or three people that are hopefully not more than that are going to show up like, oh, I can't wait for their take on...
well, they have snow falling from the...
Exactly.
They do.
We do have snow falling because there is a play of A Christmas Carol going on. We want to be true to that. And then the second soundtrack that's in the play is popular music from the 80s and 90s keeps getting funneled in to the theater.
Through the frequency on the microphones and the sound system, which happens a lot. Well, it's happened to me, certainly,
yep.
Where you'll get, you know, some crazy country music station coming
out of
through
nowhere.
Your microphone out of nowhere.
Because of the wireless.
And
yeah.
on their Tech Sunday, that's what's happening in this production. They're dealing with this 80s station. What's the dance number song?
Oh, man. We've got a dance number to 10,000 Maniacs Because of the Night. I think that's the title of it. And then Pat Benatar's We Belong.
We Belong. That's the thing.
Yeah, there's a full dance number to that because the actors are trapped in a theater where they can't rehearse because this music keeps piping in. So they just start making up their own.
Actor's nightmare. Or stage manager's
nightmare. Yeah, stage manager's
nightmare. Again.
And artistic director's nightmare
because
she needs to sell
nightmare.
This show.
Real life intruding on art, as it often does.
And there's the stage manager in this production of a millionth production of Christmas Carol is actually a stage manager and has done stage management duties for the pair in a number of shows. And so... it's kind of meta for us that are familiar with the pair to see some of our familiars up there.
Well, James Cope, Geeks versus Zombies, the millionth production of A Christmas Carol. What else is on your fertile pen's tip these days? what can we expect on the road?
The next one we've been talking about is, and we're still working out the title, but and we have an outline, but it's I need some time with it. I've spent so much time with this, but it's called Women Kill Nazis or Girls Kill Nazis. We're still trying to working title. A collaborator with me, we did Geeks vs. Zombies. Like, I got our next show. And I was already thinking about The Christmas Carol, and it wouldn't leave me alone. And so I was like, I got to write this. I got to get it out. And he was like, the next one is going to be called Women Kills Nazis. Takes place in the future where the Nazis have finally taken over America and the women are going to kill them all. And I was like, well, that's not really – that's just like – that's not even a pitch. That's I was like, we don't have anything. And he's like, no, it'll work.
Like drug-induced. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, until that comes our way, catch the millionth production of A Christmas Carol by James Cope. It is in its final version, and it's through the 17th of December at the Pear Theater, thepear.org for more information. James Cope, directing and playwright. Betsy Cruz Craig, artistic director of The Pear, will see you for the next production of The Pear. Thanks so much for coming down. I look forward to seeing this so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. It's wonderful.
More information about that at thepear.org. I'm sorry not to have had the opportunity to talk with fellow flutist Claire Chase about her project Density 2036, which is this Saturday afternoon, 4:30, at the Berkeley Art Museum and Pacific Film Archive. Claire has commissioned and has been working on this project for a number of years. She's a soloist, collaborative artist, curator, and advocate for new and experimental music. Over the past decade, she's given the world premiere of hundreds of new works for the flute and performances throughout the Americas, Europe, and Asia. She was named a MacArthur Fellow in 2012 and in 2017 received the Avery Fisher Prize. World premiere performances of her commissioned works for Density 2036 at the Berkeley Art Museum and Pacific Film Archive this Saturday at 4:30. Well, before the San Francisco Symphony begins its many and varied holiday offerings, they're going to be doing a feature film, Hitchcock's classic North by Northwest, with the San Francisco Symphony this Friday and Saturday evening. Richard Kaufman conducting the San Francisco Symphony live to a screening of North by Northwest. Then the Symphony Holiday Brass get underway on Sunday under the direction of Edwin Outwater for some holiday and classical music. And also on Friday, Christmas with Sole Mio at the Opera House with the Opera Orchestra, one night only, multi-platinum New Zealand trio Sole Mio, which is Adler Fellows and Brothers, Renee and Amitai Patti with their baritone Samoan cousin Moses Mackay will have a concert of holiday classics and other works as a trio Friday, December 1st at 7:30 at the San Francisco Opera House. That's open air for this final day of November as we get into holiday seasonal music. I'm David Latulib. Our producer is Niels Swinkels for open air. If you've got a show suggestion, send me an email, david@kalw.org. A reminder that our shows are archived at the KALW website, kalw.org. Thanks for tuning in.